You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
It is the 8th of July. On the 5th of July, we had a very important event, which was the presentation of the union budget. And since then, the stock markets are reeling a little bit. All the stories from Dalal Street and beyond are what I bring to you on our usual Stories of the Day roundup. My name is Rakesh Sharma, and you're listening to Money Control.
Editor's Pick of the Day.
The big news is, of course, that the Indian stock market witnessed a bit of a sharp correction today. Benchmark indices BSE Sensex and Nifty 50 tumbled over 2% each. The indices saw their biggest one-day fall in 4 years amid selling across the board. The fall, of course, comes on the back of a number of proposals in the budget, which was announced last week, like increase in minimum public shareholding, 20% tax on share buybacks, and a steep increase in the taxing of the ultra-rich segment. And there are, of course, weak global cues as well, denting the sentiment and nudging investors to press the panic button. And as we saw, Asian markets also took a sharp correction today. The BSE Sensex plunged as much as 908 points at one point, but then ended about 793 points below from the previous close, or about 2% down. The Nifty 50 slipped about 253 points to close at 11,559. The reasons that people and analysts are citing: proposal to reduce promoter shareholding, higher taxation for FPIs, and global factors. The Economic Times also went on to report US jobs data, which was strong enough, so the possibility of a Fed rate cut this month are dwindling, so that may also have contributed to the correction that we saw in financial markets in Asia, and specifically in India as well. The sell-off in Asia, the rupee and crude oil movements, and earnings jitters may also have been responsible. IT bellwethers will be announcing their results over the course of this week. We will start with TCS, which will announce them on Tuesday. Infosys will be on Friday. So all of these factors combining to produce a rather underwhelming and frankly quite shocking day on Dalal Street. Analysts at Morgan Stanley have turned a little less optimistic on global equities and cut their allocation on this asset class from equal weight to underweight. This, according to a report on Business Standard. Among all asset classes, they are now underweight in both equities and credit, equal weight in government bonds, and overweight in cash. Their most preferred asset class is the emerging market fixed income. News reports have emerged that the build-up to the Air India privatization has taken off in full swing, with the union budget announcing it as the centerpiece of divestment this year. The government is apparently targeting October as the deadline for announcing the deal. Not leaving anything to chance, after a failed attempt earlier, the government has shortlisted the potential bidders. Tata Group is on top for its interest in aviation. Sources in the know have said to Business Standard that the government would initiate talks with businesses, including, of course, the Tatas, shortly for divesting its stake in the national carrier. Speaking of the Tatas, Bloomberg has reported that the Tata Group paid lenders and the government about 50,000 crore rupees, that's about $7.3 billion, to help complete the sale of its mobile phone services business to Bharti Airtel, which was a deal that was announced almost 2 years ago. Tata Sons, which is the group holding company, paid the DOT, that is the Department of Telecommunications, 10,000 crore rupees late last month, days after settling all pending loans worth 40,000 crore rupees owed by Tata Teleservices, which is a Mumbai-based group. The Tata Group's spokeswoman said in a statement, and I quote, "All debt obligations of the consumer mobile business of Tata Teleservices have been repaid as per schedule." Well, returning to the aftermath of the budget once again, Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman said today that there was no need for any clarification on the additional tax burden which could apply to foreign portfolio investors, that is FPIs, due to higher surcharges introduced by her budget. Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman had, of course, proposed in her FY20 budget that surcharge on the income tax outgo of certain taxpayers with income in the range of 2 to 5 crores will be increased to 25% and to 37% in the case of those earning even more. Indian markets, of course, crashed due to a sell-off led by FPIs, who now may have to pay higher tax on their income due to these new rules. Another day, another scam at Punjab National Bank. Shares of PNB slumped as much as 7% intraday after yet another fraud, this time by Bhushan Power and Steel. An analyst said on the condition of anonymity, the revealing forensic audit should become a part of good governance and best practices in the Indian banking universe. It would build confidence in the minds of the investors, unquote. Why is there need for more confidence? Because, well, on Saturday, the Punjab National Bank reported a 3,805 crore rupee fraud with exposure of 3,800 crore rupees, including domestic exposure of 3,191 crore rupees and overseas exposure of $49.7 million at the bank's Dubai branch and $38.5 million at the bank's Hong Kong branch. Bhushan Power is one of the 12 accounts identified by the RBI for insolvency proceedings. PNB said the company misappropriated bank funds and manipulated books to raise funds from consortium lenders. Analysts covering the stock, 3 have a buy rating, 8 have a hold rating, while 20 have a sell rating on Punjab National Bank. This according to Bloomberg data. Well, in a nightmare very reminiscent of my own mother's nightmare, a customer was served non-vegetarian food instead of paneer on Zomato. A consumer court in Pune slapped a 55,000 rupee fine on Zomato along with a hotel for delivering non-vegetarian food to a lawyer who had ordered a vegetarian dish. He asked for paneer and he was served butter chicken instead. Airbnb had an estimated direct economic impact of around $150 million. That's over 1,000 crore rupees in India in 2018, according to its survey. Airbnb hosts collectively earned about $28 million. That's about 190 crores and welcomed approximately 8 lakh guests in 2018, according to the company's statement. Guests in India, on an average, spent about $61 on a daily basis, with the total estimated guest spends over the year at around $120 million. At a global level, Airbnb's host and guest community generated over $100 billion in estimated direct economic impact across 30 countries in 2018. LinkedIn has a new boss. Ashutosh Gupta is now the new country manager for India operations. A veteran in sales with 2 decades of experience in IT and software services, Gupta will take charge from the 2nd of September. He has worked with Google, Cognizant and Infosys and joined LinkedIn's marketing solutions in 2013. Gupta, that is Ashutosh Gupta, will replace Mahesh Narayanan, who was the country manager for India from January to June of this year. The UK's data privacy watchdog has fined British Airways more than £183 million after computer hackers last year stole bank details from hundreds of thousands of passengers. The UK Information Commissioner's Office said it had issued a notice of its intention to fine BA $183.39 million, about €205 million, for infringements of EU data protection rules or the GDPR. In other news coming out of the country, the only thing we can talk about is Karnataka's government, the Congress-JDS government, and how close to the edge of breaking up it is. Karnataka's year-old coalition government between the Congress and Janata Dal is again on life support. An independent lawmaker has quit, taking the total number of resignations since just last week to 15. 13 of them belong to Congress and the Janata Dal Secular. Earlier today, another independent, who was in fact made a minister a month ago, resigned and came out in support of the BJP. Chief Minister Kumaraswamy, who cut short a private visit to the US and returned to Karnataka to handle this crisis, said all Congress and JDS ministers have resigned and a cabinet reshuffle will happen soon. The idea is to make room for rebels who might be persuaded to return. The BJP, of course, has denied any role in this crisis, but sources say it is getting ready to strike. This according to a report on NDTV. But of course, allegations of horse trading continue back and forth. 13 lawmakers who resigned over the last week, and the Congress is claiming that the BJP ferried these lawmakers to a 5-star hotel in Mumbai in a private aircraft, and they've been visiting the hotel, and the Congress is apparently not allowed entry there. There are also reports of 2 more exits, including that of Congress's Soumya Reddy, who is the daughter of former Karnataka Minister Ramlinga Reddy. Congress troubleshooter D.K. Shivkumar had in fact made another accusation. Nagesh, this independent lawmaker who has also stepped down, about him, D.K. Shi said, and I quote, "Just now, Mr. Nagesh called me and said that the BJP said that he has been hijacked by Mr. Yediyurappa's personal attendant and the BJP. And by the time I reached the airport, the flight had left." So, allegations of horse trading, the government on the verge of collapse, the president's rule perhaps impending. Who knows? The JDS, meanwhile, has moved all its lawmakers to a resort. Sources have said the party has booked 35 rooms in Paddington Resort in Kodagu for tonight. And how do numbers stack up? If these resignations stand, the Congress-JDS coalition's 118 members in the 224-seat assembly will come down to 104. The majority mark will drop from 113 to 106. The BJP, with the support of Nagesh, the independent lawmaker who's just quit, has 106 members. The Speaker of the House, Ramesh Kumar, who was not in office when these 11 lawmakers quit last week, we'll examine these resignation letters tomorrow. NDTV has reported that India has reacted strongly to and lodged a diplomatic protest over a new report by the UN Office of the High Commission for Human Rights on Jammu and Kashmir. The Indian government has called the report, quote, false with a motivated narrative, unquote. The report, which is a follow-up to the one that the UN Rights Office filed last year, once again, controversially, called on India to, quote, respect the right of self-determination of the people of Kashmir as protected under international law, unquote. The Ministry of External Affairs accused the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights of legitimizing terrorism and said the assertions in the report are in violation of India's sovereignty and territorial integrity and ignore the core issue of cross-border terrorism, unquote. At a recent event in Indore on Saturday, Shabana Azmi had said that anyone who criticizes the government is branded as an anti-national. And she went on a little bit more about how India is a country of the Ganga Jamuni Tehzeeb. There is confluence of different cultures and how the country is a melting pot of different cultures and tolerance has always been the cornerstone of India as a country. Now, responding to this, Minister Giriraj Singh, by the way, a union minister, called her, well, she's the new leader of the Tukde Tukde gang. So if you've been wondering who the new leader is, there she is, Shabana Azmi, sharing a video of the actor saying that those remarks that I mentioned earlier, Giriraj Singh said that Shabana is not just the leader of the Tukde Tukde gang, but also the Award Vapsi gang. And responding to this criticism, Azmi has said that her criticism of the government was not reserved to the BJP and that she had criticized the Congress when it was in power over the murder of playwright Safdar Hashmi. And she also said a poem by Faiz Ahmed Faiz, which I will repeat to you because they are beautiful. Bol ke lab azad hai. Bol ke lab azad hai tere. Bol zaba ab tak teri hai. Bol ke sach zinda hai ab tak. Bol jo kuch kehna hai, kehle. Well, in news that has just emerged, the Supreme Court today dismissed a plea filed by the Kerala unit of Akhil Bharat Hindu Mahasabha seeking directions allowing entry of Muslim women into the mosques for offering prayers. It upheld the Kerala High Court order, which had said that the PIL was motivated and used for cheap publicity. A bench of Chief Justice Ranjan Gogoi and Justices Deepak Gupta and Anirudh Bose dismissed the appeal against the Kerala High Court order. The bench said, and I quote, "Who are you? How are you affected? Let the aggrieved persons come before us," unquote. When petitioner Swami Dattatreya Sai Swarupnath, Kerala State President of the Hindu Mahasabha, tried to answer the court's question in Malayalam, the bench asked a council president of the courtroom to assist it by translating the language. The council translated for the bench that Swami was a petitioner and he has challenged a Kerala High Court order. To this, the bench said that the Kerala High Court has noted in its order that media reports were there even before the PIL and this was motivated and used for cheap publicity. The founder of Saravana Bhavan, who has been sentenced to life for murder, has launched a Supreme Court appeal to delay the beginning of his term on Monday. And the reason he's asking for a delay? Poor health. P. Rajagopal, who is the founder of Saravana Bhavan, which is not just in India but has a presence across the world, was found guilty and sentenced to 10 years in 2004 over the killing of a love rival. Reports say that Rajagopal, also known as Dosa King, was obsessed with the daughter of an employee and wanted to marry her. Unable to take a no for an answer, he ordered the killing of her husband. Rajagopal was meant to surrender to authorities by the 7th of July, that is yesterday, after his life conviction was upheld by the Supreme Court in March. But he moved the Supreme Court again today, saying he was hospitalized and needed more time. And in the meanwhile, just for background, he wanted to marry this woman because, well, she would be his third wife. And the reason why he wanted a third wife, an astrologer had told him, very important. Turning very quickly to news from elsewhere, specifically financial markets, we start, of course, with the US stock futures. They're pointing to a lower Wall Street open this morning after Friday's strong jobs data dampened any hopes for a Fed interest rate cut later this month. This according to CNBC. Despite the declines we saw on Friday from Wednesday's record closing highs, the Dow and S&P 500 rose more than 1% each for the holiday shortened week. As we know, last week, the Independence Day of the United States was, of course, a stock market holiday. The Nasdaq saw a weekly advance of nearly 2% for the last week. Sticking to stock market news from the United States, shares of Dow component Apple have been under pressure in pre-market sessions after Rosenblatt Securities downgraded the stock to sell from neutral, saying it thinks there is less reward for ownership. Rosenblatt did maintain its 12-month $150 price target for Apple, this according to CNBC. The Wall Street Journal has reported that adding to the drag on the overall market were shares of Dow stock Boeing. The US aircraft giant lost out on a 737 MAX deal to its European rival Airbus after Saudi Arabian low-cost carrier Flydeal said it would buy up to 50 Airbus A320neo planes. The 737 MAX jets have been grounded in March, as we know, after those two deadly crashes. Also in the news today is, of course, Deutsche Bank. The shares of Deutsche Bank have turned negative after initially jumping nearly 4% in early morning trade today, as the German lender announced a mass restructuring program over the weekend. In one of its boldest overhauls, the bank is all set to see 18,000 jobs being cut by 2022, as well as the closure of its global equities sales and trading business, all in a bid to improve profitability. This, according to CNBC. CNBC has also reported that a new analysis of employment information of Huawei personnel appears to show deeper links between the technology giant and China's military and intelligence bodies than was previously acknowledged by the firm. Some employees of Huawei can be linked to, quote, specific instances of hacking or industrial espionage conducted against Western firms. This, according to a report on CNBC. Reuters, meanwhile, has reported that office space manager WeWork is looking to raise $3 to $4 billion in debt before it becomes a publicly traded stock. Why this move? Well, because of the less than spectacular IPO debuts of Uber and Lyft have made other money-losing startups with lofty valuations to reassess their IPO plans. This according to Reuters, which also reported that Starbucks has apologized after an employee at one of its stores in Arizona asked six police officers to leave or move, which triggered a whole social media backlash if you've been following it on Twitter. These officers had visited the store on the 4th of July and had even paid for their drinks. But then an employee approached them about a customer within the premises, saying that person was not feeling safe because of the presence of the police. And since then, there was a huge social media backlash, and Starbucks has now had to apologize. Billionaire financier and, more importantly, registered sex offender Jeffrey Epstein was arrested on Saturday in New York on new sex trafficking charges involving allegations that date to the early 2000s. This, according to law enforcement officials. An official said Epstein is accused of paying underage girls for massages and molesting them at his homes in Florida and New York. This arrest, of course, comes in the midst of a renewed scrutiny of a once secret plea deal that ended a federal investigation against him. And why is Epstein important? He is a huge Democratic donor, as it happens, and has been friends with people in high places, including President Donald Trump, former President Bill Clinton, Britain's Prince Andrew, and several others. As usual, a quick update on what is happening in Donald Trump world. He's going to be talking about his environmental leadership. Hold for laugh. Because we do realize, and we do all remember, that he was the man who pulled the United States out of the Paris Climate Accord. He has been boosting fossil fuel development, and he has rolled back numerous Obama-era environmental protections. And as usual, he has also questioned climate change science. When it was snowing someplace, he wondered aloud where climate change was, because, well, it was snowing. So his lack of understanding of climate science is obviously another thing that makes us laugh when he's going to be giving a speech defending his administration's environmental record. Well, this is Trump world, and we are all in a twilight zone. In news emerging from the Korean Peninsula, Stephen Biegun, who is the top US diplomat on North Korea, will be in Brussels and Berlin for discussions with Lee Do-hoon, who is South Korea's special representative on peace and security. And these talks will be on the question of denuclearizing North Korea. In important news from the Middle East, Tehran has confirmed it is no longer complying with the nuclear deal that it signed in 2015. Again, another deal that Trump made America withdraw from. Iran has said it will boost enrichment levels above the limit agreed in the deal, but still far short of the concentration needed for weapons-grade nuclear material. They've also said they'll use it as they see fit. What they will eventually use it for, we do not know. But within the limits of the record of the deal that was signed in 2015, inspectors had visited these sites in Iran and they had reported that Iran had actually complied with those terms. But ever since America withdrew from this deal, they have gone on the offensive, not least because of also the altercation between the United States and Iran when war was almost seeming imminent. And now they're saying we'll do what we choose to do with whatever uranium we have and whatever we can get. A report on the Washington Post has revealed that the FBI, as well as ICE, which is Immigration and Customs Enforcement, have actually been scanning through millions of driver's license photos over the last 5 years, all of them without the approval of the US Congress for their investigations. Now, this is a huge breach of privacy, and how this will be addressed by the FBI as well as ICE will be something to watch out for. But this, according to the Washington Post. Just last week, we did an explainer on the Hong Kong protests and why exactly they were happening. What is this extradition bill that these hundreds of thousands of protesters are protesting? There has been another one. About 230,000 people took to the streets, again, part of a series of protests, which are all in opposition to an extradition bill and now encompass other issues like police brutality as well as lack of democracy. We have reported earlier that these protests were because of a controversial extradition bill that Hong Kong was about to pass, in which people having committed crimes in Hong Kong could be extradited to mainland China or any other place from which Hong Kong does not have an extradition treaty, where they could stand trial there and not necessarily get a free or fair trial. This according to the people who are protesting. And considering this extradition bill has not been withdrawn yet, these protests are continuing, and yet another one took place over the weekend. There's a new problem in our oceans. Apparently, a floating mass of seaweed stretching from West Africa to the Gulf of Mexico is now the biggest seaweed bloom in the world. This according to satellite observations and as reported by the BBC. The reason for this? Well, deforestation and fertilizer use are among the top factors thought to be driving this expansive growth. It's about as large as 8,850 kilometers, occupying a large part of the Atlantic Ocean. It is called the Great Atlantic Sargassum Belt. Now, why is this difficult or why is this problematic? Number one, too much of seaweed can smother corals and seagrasses and end up on beaches. And when they do end up on beaches, they release gas which smells like rotten eggs. And beyond this, it is also very difficult to clear these things, time-consuming, expensive, and not always effective. The reasons for this is ultimately climate change, because it affects precipitation as well as ocean circulation, and there are other human activities which are shown to have impacted the growth of these blooms, and is not necessarily because of raised water temperature, but still very much related to human activities and climate change. Now, we've all seen Friends growing up at some point in time or another, or one of the many reruns on any of the streaming platforms. You will remember that one episode where Joey and Chandler have got a rooster and a duck. That rooster crows at all hours of the morning, disturbing Monica and Rachel, who are living in the opposite apartment. And so, what they want for Joey and Chandler to do is to get rid of the rooster, and in exchange, they would write off the flat that they are living in. So, if you think that was a high-stakes game, there is another one going on in real life, this time in France. In France, by the way, roosters are held in a special significance. During the French Revolution, the rooster was a symbol of vigilance. Its traits, which is, you know, pridefulness, lacking any shame, as it were, and possessing this fighting spirit, are all very symbolic of the Republic. It has appeared in monuments. You've seen it. If you've been traveling in France, you've seen a lot of roosters on their uniforms and monuments and so on and so forth. But this time, there is this a rooster in a village in France called Maurice, not the name of the village, the name of the rooster. Maurice is a beautiful looking bird. I've seen photographs of his, but he's also very proud of his song. Every morning, he does his thing and screams into the void to herald everybody into the day. But the problem here is the neighbors don't like it. Now, this is a countryside town where people have been living for decades. These are continuous dwellers, but considering it is a French countryside town, a lot of urban people also come there to holiday. Now, some of these people don't like Maurice's song, even though the villagers, more often than not, who are living there, don't particularly have a problem with it. The neighbors asked the owner of this rooster to keep her rooster under check, and she said, no, this is a rooster, this is his house, he'll do what he feels like at whatever time he wants to do it. And now Maurice is in court because the neighbors filed a case against Maurice. Now, what this has led to is also an exacerbation of a divide between rural and urban people in France. Now, all of these urban dwellers coming to this little village for holiday are the ones complaining. And the people who've always lived in this village are saying, this is the countryside and this is what happens in a countryside. Get used to it. We don't have a problem with it. So this case right now, very important case going on in France. And finally, some extraordinary news, which has huge ramifications. The US women's soccer team has won the World Cup. Of the past 8 editions, this is the 4th one that they have won, and they had even won the last one. Now, why is this important? Important because it leads us into a very important conversation about the pay gap when it comes to soccer. Now, let's explain what that is all about. The US Women's Soccer Team and US Soccer Federation have agreed to enter mediation over a lawsuit which is brought by all 28 players against their employer, that is US Soccer Federation. Why? The women of this soccer team are saying gender discrimination. One analysis by the newspaper Guardian said that of each team's collective bargaining agreements found that the US women's soccer players earned about $90,000 each in World Cup bonuses so far. But if they were men, they would have made $550,000. Now, you would think, well, men's soccer is probably more popular than women's soccer. It probably brings in more ad revenue and more eyeballs watching these games, etc., etc. And that is how they justify it. You would think that. But there is one analysis from the Wall Street Journal, which has found that US women's soccer matches actually had stronger ticket sales, brought in more revenue from games than the men's team between 2016 and 2018. Just in fact, this particular match that took place, the final against the Netherlands, which the US won, had about 1 billion viewers tuning in. Ticket prices are breaking records, and women's national soccer players in Australia, Norway, Brazil, Nigeria are all calling out the gender pay gap in their own countries. So Megan Rapinoe, who is the player on the US soccer team, has won 2 big awards for scoring the most goals and for the most valuable player in the tournament, etc. Has also, in addition to this gender pay gap battle that she's fighting along with her teammates, is fighting another battle, this time with the bully in charge, President Donald Trump. She had said that the policies of this current administration are very anti-LGBTQ and that the team should take a stance in not visiting the World Cup. This was, of course, before they had qualified for the quarterfinals or semifinals or indeed winning the finals. So she had sent out a tweet saying, I am not going to visit the White House should an invite come my way. And back then, he, in his petulant fashion, had said, get the job done first, win the cup, and then we'll talk about it. So there is also that fight that Megan Rapinoe is fighting as a result. What happened in terms of this resolution after they won the World Cup? He has, of course, sent out a rather gracious tweet saying congratulations to the team that won, etc. But will he and his team invite the World Cup winning team to the White House? And will Megan Rapinoe accept the invitation is another thing to consider. So there are two big battles going on. One with the bully in charge, bully in chief, and the other with the pay discriminating US Soccer Federation, which will be an interesting story to watch what the resolution for both these stories will be. Well, that's pretty much all the news that I thought was important enough to share with you. Welcome back. The new week has begun, and how? The tremors that we saw on Dalal Street, quite something. About 800 points lost. Let's quickly recap what happened on Dalal Street today. Worst fall in 2009, the worst single day fall in 4 years. The BSE Sensex fell nearly 800 points, and the Nifty 50 slipped below the 11,600 levels and took support near its 100 days exponential moving average, placed near 11,000. 534. Well, that's it. We'll be back with another podcast on the legacy of Lee Iacocca. And of course, tomorrow, first thing in the morning as usual, with Morning Walk Down Dalal Street and Stock Picks of the Day. Do write into us, mcpodcast@nw18.com, or leave us a comment on any of the platforms that you listen to us on. We look forward to them very much. Until the next time you hear from me, this is me, Rakesh Sharma, on behalf of the Money Control Podcast Desk, saying thank you for joining us, and do stay with us on moneycontrol.com to be a smart listener and an even smarter investor.
This has been today's Editor's Pick, and you've been listening to Money Control.